Hi, my name is Donna Vivarette, and I work in Jefferson County at the Department of Public Health, just west of here. I'm going to be talking with you today about the partnerships that we built to address compliance and enforcement needs with the state and local law in Colorado. I have no relationships commercially related to this issue. And I'm going to be covering really the challenges that our local public health tobacco control program faced with regard to supporting compliance and enforcement issues with smoke-free laws, and how the partnerships that we developed really out of a need to work on this resulted in some great benefits to our agency in the work in tobacco control. I'll also briefly, I have one slide covering what we think would be needed to really enhance this work with the local health agency's role in compliance and enforcement. A bit about Jefferson County. Again, we're the county just west of Denver. Beautiful community. We welcome your visit if you have time to come and see us. Jefferson County has 11 jurisdictions that either have statutory or local home rule authority for voting, and we're just over a 500,000 people. In 2006, July, the state smoke-free law went into effect, and it's a relatively strong law with several exemptions, which I'll talk about in a bit. But prior to that, the second largest city in our county, Arvada, passed a smoke-free law that was the first one in our county as a result of local coalition advocacy. And that law included several outdoor areas. We created smoke-free parks and trails in that community, even though we had a ventilation cause and bars at that time were exempted. The state law overlaid the local law and upped the strength of that law considerably. And then in 2008, the city of Arvada went back and closed a particularly onerous exemption, the one for tobacco businesses, which many of you know is really causative with regard to hookah bars opening. And that resulted in Arvada's law being about the strongest in our state. Since then, 2008, we've had five communities engage in local policy efforts, one of which passed its law this last July, and I'll explain why we were able to move that quickly in five other communities. So a little bit more about our Clean Indoor Air Act at the state level. Because there wasn't a signage requirement in the state statute, there was a public information campaign that the state health department initiated to drive people to a hotline and to a website, smokefreecolorado.org. The website still exists, but the hotline is non-existent. The website drives people to their local non-emergency police department phone numbers, and it directs them to call local health agencies for more information. The site, so a little bit about the exemptions. I mentioned tobacco businesses already, and we've noticed a number of tobacco businesses, smoke shops, being turned into smoking lounges, if you will, and installing wireless internet and other features that make them highly desirable. The other exemptions that are here, cigar bars, small businesses with three or fewer employees not open to the public, and some other things are not uncommon in state or local laws. We've found that most of our complaints have centered around a definition of an enclosed area that has been a little vague, that is a little vague, and has resulted in people, business owners of bars and restaurants, erecting semi-permanent or permanent structures around their outdoor seating areas, so patios. And we get complaints about those, and we get complaints about seepage from adjacent businesses where a smoking allowed establishment is operated. And another area of complaint for us is the 15-foot rule. We have a 15-foot from the main public entrance of businesses. That's a smoke-free buffer zone, and we do get a lot of complaints about that, primarily because of the absence of the signage. So as we begin to look at, and we're encouraged by our state health department to do so, look at compliance and how we might support our communities in improving compliance with the state law, we ran into some significant barriers, which I'll talk about, and then I'll talk about the solutions. One was that there is definitely a perception that the enforcement, which lies with our local law enforcement, is really perceived as a burden on policing, which makes sense. Going into detail, I mean, people have said to us, it wouldn't make sense that patrols patrol officers would have to stop and ticket somebody that they saw smoking within a 15-foot buffer zone of an entranceway. The other challenge and perception that we found as a difficulty was the idea that these laws result in criminalizing smoking. With the expectation that people would be ticketed comes this question, well, if people don't even know the law exists, is it fair that they're ticketed? That's, you know, taking a perfectly respectable citizen and basically making them a criminal for smoking. The other thing I've mentioned, of course, is the lack of required signage in the state law, which eliminated the self-enforcing effect of good signage. The other two things I think were particularly early on big challenges for us. We were trying to find a way to help our communities understand that these laws are social norm-changing laws and should be thought of differently than, say, you know, brandishing a weapon in public might be considered. Although many would say that brandishing a burning cigarette, is a weapon. But it was difficult for us to try and articulate why these laws might be considered slightly different and should be approached in terms of compliance differently. The other thing that we ran into is that there was really no way to talk about complaints, how many complaints were coming in, and what happened with those complaints, because dispatchers at local police departments deal with these complaints very differently across our communities and between dispatchers. Some of them code them very differently, and it's difficult to get the information. Well, back then, I didn't have access to this, and this is from the Global Smoke-Free Partnership document, and it basically talks about the role that civil society plays with smoke-free laws. And I'm just going to read the top, but I welcome you and encourage you to go read their toolkit document. The slide says, civil society has a vital role to play at every stage of the implementation and enforcement of smoke-free air laws. And if we had used that with our policymakers back then, we may have saved ourselves a little bit of challenge, I think. We're happy to have that document now, though. So with respect to the solutions we found, we started really tackling the misperceptions and the concerns. One, with regard to finding or the burden on law enforcement, we basically met with our local law enforcement and municipal leaders to talk about this perception and what we could do, what role we could play in help reducing this burden. We had relationships with local law enforcement for a variety of reasons, including other public health issues that we worked with them on. So it was pretty easy to identify at least one local law enforcement to connect with. And we started to call them our liaison officers. They helped us design a process that allowed our staff to receive complaint calls, and in some cases, the law enforcement officers directed calls to us or emailed us about complaint calls, and then our staff went out and did compliance assessment investigations, and sometimes those investigations were actually initially conducted by coalition members. We handled those complaint calls by doing an educational intervention and then followed up with an assessment to make sure that compliance was still happening. Our law enforcement became involved only when there was complex issues or ongoing, intentional, if you will, noncompliance. This really resulted in minimal staff time for our staff at the Tobacco Control Program. Basically, one incoming call or an email from law enforcement or a call from a community member calling to complain, and then one outgoing call to a business owner. Sometimes it was a visit if there was a particularly complex issue and the proprietor wanted to meet with one of us and maybe get some technical assistance. And then a follow-up letter, as I mentioned, which actually included the dialogue between the proprietor and our staff, indicating what the proprietor was willing to do to address the compliance problem. That letter would go out to the law enforcement agency as a record of our attempts to work with that proprietor. And then we would do an assessment, a follow-up assessment within 2 to 8 weeks. And again, that was usually a coalition member doing a follow-up. So we created some documents that I have uploaded so you can get them online with the APHA site, including a protocol about what we did. So, really, the other issue was the criminalization of smoking. And I would say that basically became a minimized concern, and it's pretty much a minimal concern among our communities now. Because of our relationship with our law enforcement liaison officers who now see the value of this educational intervention, they have become advocates for working with us. We go out, we provide signs, technical assistance, we educate people about public health policy and the social norms change aspect of this law. And again, it results in rare ticketing. And most importantly, it's resulted in a number of really wonderful alliances. With our law enforcement liaison folks, they're remarkable. They become advocates for policy strengthening. We've had a law enforcement officer actually ask for model language and take it back to her city council. We've had proactive engagement from law enforcement officers. One officer called us when a local, quote, biker bar decided to build an enclosure around their patio, and he called us to say, is that right? Can they do that? And then we made a joint visit with that bar owner, and then she erected the patio differently to meet the stipulations of the state law. They also help us navigate policy issues. So when local council members are considering the law, they'll talk to us about where to get some advocates working. We also have convened a group of elected officials that we now call the Joint Municipal Leaders Group, and that has been remarkable. Basically, five communities have designated elected officials who come together and work on a coordinated approach to municipal policy around smoke-free issues and youth access issues. We also involved our DA's office. Our code enforcement and building department and consumer protection agencies have become involved as advocates too, and I'd love to talk with you more about that. The big thing, though, is our coalition members feel highly invested, empowered. They have a real strong sense of being stakeholders in this process now and are involved in civic activities beyond just tobacco issues. And many of them are involved in built community issues now and are concerned about other public health issues. So what we know we still need, we need to really elevate that conversation about the role that our communities play in smoke-free law, design, implementation, and enforcement. And we need better assessment of the noncompliance concerns and tracking of follow-up. And then again, I think really engaging the people who have to implement the enforcement activities in the design of the language. I didn't talk about that, but our law enforcement agents tell us loud and clear, I wish they would let us be involved in designing some of the language so that they can be a part of it as well. So that's it, and I guess I might have a minute for questions.
We have time for one question.
Yes. We have not taken that on in our county, and I think only one municipality in the state's actually looked at that and hasn't moved forward with looking at a smoke-free car law. I would imagine that if we engage them similar, you know, to what we propose with regard to smoke-free laws at the start, even as we start dialogue about it, if you have a few advocates inside the force, like if the chief comes on board, it's remarkable what things can change. But that's a great question, and we have yet to face that challenge. Gotcha. Yep. There's real diversity on each force, but because our six largest municipalities have this liaison officer that the chief has agreed to identify and work with, calls get routed to that person, and they tend to be the advocates with their colleagues on the force, and they can't persuade everybody to take the same level of interest, but it's greatly helped having those liaison officers. Thank you.